Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I am one of your hosts. My name is Alex Croson.
And I'm your other host. I'm Casey.
Wow.
There's a bunch of hairs.
You know,
there's stuff on my microphone, Alex.
Without fail, you find something to do the moment we start recording.
Yeah, it's far more interesting than me just being like, also, hello. NPR would be very, very upset with how we do this show.
Oh, I doubt that.
I should say how I do this show.
Hi, Casey.
Good day, Alex. How's it going?
It's going all right.
I'm glad to see you. You're wearing your old Lakers gear again.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that's the Lake Oswego Lakers, to be very clear.
That's right.
Alex is biased towards them.
I worked at that school for a couple months and this is the ultimate example of I worked at that school and all I got was this lousy sweatshirt.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's a nice looking sweatshirt.
I love it. It's my home sweatshirt. Yeah, I usually wear it when I'm at home. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How are you, Casey?
Doing very well. Doing this. It's great. It's a nice day. I've been working hard, just writing things, doing a lot. Just everything's always a lot all the time. And I think it's good, but also feeling stressed sometimes.
Yeah.
Got to make sure everyone knows that even people like me can feel stressed.
Sure.
I'm sorry. It was a little bit inside.
We don't need to do this now, but I will say you are really good at saying yes to things.
Mm, yes. True.
Oh, Casey.
Oh, my God.
I caught you in the act.
You're right. I do tend to say yes to things and also tend to try to do things. I don't know. Like even writing is a big thing for me. I'm trying to be a writer, so I'm trying to say yes to doing writing things.
Sure.
But it also takes me, I can't just sit down and be like, okay, and here's like 30 paragraphs. I have to like write it and then I'm like, is this where I want to go? And then I rewrite something. Then I'm trying to get my technique down.
Okay.
So it's a learning while doing, as they say, I'm building the ship while I'm sailing it. Is that right?
Something like that? Or like the railroad as you're going, you're like putting the ties and the rails.
Exactly. Like. So I'm building the thing I'm going on and figuring out where I'm going all at the same time.
Yeah.
It's great. Although it's a lot.
Well, there's a lot happening all the time, as you say. So exactly. I love that phrase. Casey, one of the things happening is that you and I commissioned some beautiful artwork.
We did.
From artist Tori Gorham.
It's right down there in Australia.
That's right. Mm-hmm. This was a while ago, and we recently got it printed on a tote bag.
That's right. It's incredible, you guys.
It is a great bag. I cannot wait to go out into the field and use it.
Yeah. Fill it with stuff.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people would say detritus if it was me.
Oh, I was thinking like cheeses.
Oh gosh. Yeah. We're going to different places, I think. Yeah.
That tote bag is now available on our merch store, arbitrarypod.com/merch.
Right.
Or if you just search our name and the word merch, it'll pop up. And guess what, Casey?
What, Alex?
For the month of February, if you buy a piece of merch featuring art by Tori Gorham, this includes the new tote bag.
That's right.
The Tree Buds t-shirt and the Tree Buds postcard.
That's right.
You get 10% off if you use the coupon code New Tote.
Now, I noticed you had an inflection there of a query.
Yeah. It's like you see a friend and they have a new tote. You go, New tote?
Yes. Now, to be very clear, as a statement, you must ask that as a question on the website.
The discount code is new tote question mark.
Exactly.
That is how you get 10% off anything by Tori Gorm, any art, any merch featuring the art of Tori Gorm, including the new tote. And did you know, if you follow us on your podcast app of choice, you do know that we just started a new mainline series called Seed Pod. Mm-hmm. And our first episode came out last Monday.
That's right. This most recent Monday, to my understanding.
Yes. And it features Phyllis Reynolds, Portland tree legend. She's an author, and she is was one of the founding committee members of the Portland Heritage Tree Committee.
That's right.
And she is a 94-year-old woman.
She's just crushing it out there next to the Arboretum.
Yeah. She lives up in the Arboretum, mm-hmm. basically.
Essentially, yeah.
It was a great, sweet conversation, and we edited it and put it online so that you can hear it.
Exactly. Now, of course, we also should let you know that is available to you. It's just a small section of the whole conversation that we had. We sat down with Phyllis for about an hour, 15 minutes or so, and the rest of it, and a video of the whole thing is available on our Treemium subscription service, which we highly recommend and encourage that you sign up for. Not only do you get to hear this really cool interview and other interviews, you also get things like live streams. You can join the Cone Club. You can get a new Cone of the Month every single month by an artist printed here in Portland. You also can ask us anything you want. In fact, literally anything. We call this an Ask Me Anything. AMA. That is all at arbitrarypod.supercast.com.
That's right.
You can find it basically anywhere. On Instagram, there's a click button for it.
So there's our big news. New tote and new series. And please support the podcast at arbitrarypod.supercast.com. Casey.
That's exactly right.
Today we are talking about a tree that when I discovered the species we were talking about, I was shocked that we hadn't covered it yet.
That's right. You did. You said that.
This is the Western Juniper, Juniperus occidentalis.
Yeah.
And of course, we will get to that discussion after the break. We'll be right back with Completely Arbitrary. Hi, everybody. Or should I say, hola a todos. I want you to hear something. It's this. Yes, that is the sound of learning a new language with Babbel. You have, of course, heard of Babbel. You maybe even used Babbel. But if you haven't, Babbel is an app that helps you learn languages. Babbel is a science-backed learning language app that actually works. Let me put it this way. I knew somebody who used a different language app for 365 days and still could not even have basic conversations in the language they were learning on that app. Babbel is not this. They have quick 10-minute lessons and they're handcrafted by 200 language experts so you can start learning a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Because it's designed by real people for real conversations. In fact, a recent study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. And of course, the best way to learn a new language is immersion. You go and live in the place where the people speak the language you're learning. You speak to the people, they speak back. But the second best way is Babbel. And it's practical. It will very quickly teach you how to order food, ask for directions, speak to shopkeepers, without having to consult language apps while you're on vacation. And here is a special limited time deal for our listeners right now. Get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for Fungal Associates at babbel.com/trees. That's right. If you're listening to this, if you're a fan of this show, babbel.com/trees, get 60% off your subscription. That's babbel.com/trees. Rules and restrictions may apply. Adios. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hi, everybody. It's Alex here. And you know what? Come springtime, those trees are a-bloomin'. Those people are a-walkin' around. That sun is a-shinin'. And it makes me so grateful for my social life. People are wanting to do things again. And it can be extremely rewarding to start to see friends more often and, you know, go on cute friend dates or romantical dates, sit on a patio and drink a coffee. Ooh la la. But it's really easy to overdo it. And for me, it's very important to keep an eye on my social battery. Every time I go on a social outing, I come home and I'm like, wow, I am really tired in a very specific way. Well, that's my battery. That's my social battery being drained. And I didn't really have this language until I started going to therapy. I didn't know why being around people made me so exhausted, even though I love those people and enjoy being around them. But therapy helped me with my self-awareness and helped me unlock some language that I didn't otherwise have. And if you are struggling with feelings and thoughts that you don't understand, therapy can be a great way to unlock the power of understanding. And a great way to start is BetterHelp. It's completely online and it's designed to be super convenient and flexible, which is very important. How many times have you had a therapy session on the calendar and that time rolls around and you think, I gotta drive all the way across town. I am not gonna go. It has, of course, happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to everybody who's been in therapy. No worries with BetterHelp. It's all online. And all you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist, of course. And nobody nails it on their first time. It's like going on dates. You gotta find the right therapist for you. It's silly to think that the very first date you ever go on is going to be your future spouse. So you can switch therapists at any time, no additional charge. It's extremely easy. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/trees today to get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/trees. Happy spring! Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary.
Thank you.
Today we are talking Western juniper.
That's right, Alex. Juniperus occidentalis.
Juniperus occidentalis. Casey.
Yes, Alex.
Let's imagine as we do every episode.
Please.
I know exactly where I would want to be walking here.
Where?
Just the of course, the juniperlands of Central Oregon.
Ooh, I love that that is where you want to do this.
I love it over there.
The question is, where exactly?
How about close to Bend?
Ah, yeah, okay, that sounds great.
Yeah.
Perfect. There's a wilderness area out there called, I believe, the Oregon Badlands Wilderness.
Wow.
Filled with these trees.
Well, let's go to the Badlands, my friend.
All right.
Casey, let's ID this tree.
Let's do it. This is a spectacular tree. I like this tree a lot.
Wow.
And I don't really have a good reason as to why. Hmm. It might just be that it's the one that I know of. It's like the most common in my experience. But this is the juniper that is of the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
Like by far more than any other one. As soon as you start going down to the south and going to the east, in the Great Basin and the desert southwest, that kind of area, mm-hmm. there's a bunch of them all over the place.
Okay.
As you go west into Wyoming and Colorado, Idaho, Montana, Nevada, you get other species. But in the Pacific Northwest, and I should say probably more specifically in Oregon,
yeah.
this is the juniper almost exclusively. If you're in Oregon and you see juniper, 99.9% of the
wow.
time, it is a Western juniper. It might as well be called the Oregon juniper.
It does very well here.
It really does. And it just is absolutely crushing it. It grows on the east side, though. You're not going to find it growing very commonly on the west side.
Oh, yeah.
Other than down in the Siskiyous.
Hmm.
In the Siskiyous, the Klamath Mountains, Northern California, Southern Oregon, it stretches itself inland a
wow.
little bit and then also continues down. So you can find it kind of on the coast where it's a little bit hotter, a little bit warmer, where the soils are not quite so lush and green where you'd see other conifers that can grow bigger, taller. Ponderosa pine is a great example. Jeffrey pine also.
Okay.
So you're walking over in Bend, Central Oregon, anywhere essentially east of the Cascades in Oregon, and you're going to find a big, bushy-looking tree.
Yeah.
It's going to get not too tall, but it's not going to be too short. They tend to stay around 30 feet. I think like the biggest one has been, I think it's upwards of like 50 feet or so. So they're like big ass trees. They're not the kind of juniper that people think of when they run into a little scrubby tree that's just kind of on the side of a rock.
Sure. I imagine like scrabbly, short, kind of windswept.
Right.
Almost like a shrub.
Yeah. And they can grow like that. They certainly do.
Okay.
But in the cushiest spots, in these kind of dry upland areas, is mostly where you'll find them, in this the spaces that are a little too dry for ponderosa pine, but just wet enough that you can have these larger trees grow. Boom, that's where you're going to find them. And they're just large, gorgeous trees.
They are so beautiful. What I love about junipers, I guess specifically the Western juniper I'm talking about, is that like I feel like even a somewhat young one in tree terms already looks like it's wise and has a lot of story to it.
Really?
I think it's the, well, how about we start in terms of ID characteristics?
Yeah.
How about we start with the bark, Casey?
All right, let's start with the bark. So on mature trees, the bark is, it's very thick. It's very reddish. It can kind of become grayish if it gets a little weathered. And it tends to kind of spiral up as the branches and the trunk get bigger. And it becomes very thick and furrowed. It's a little fibrous looking, but it's very hard most of the time. So that is very classic of a fire-adapted species. Thick bark, fibrous bark, and also, of course, it's in the cypress family, Cupressaceae, as a juniper. And it ends up becoming these like really red-looking spiral kind of really rough and tumble-looking branches, or looking bark on all of these branches. Mm. So it's really gorgeous. However, as a young tree, it looks starkly different. It becomes far more shaggy and kind of like flakes off almost. So in vertical shapes, or vertical flakes, I should say. It's very beautiful.
That's when it's young?
That's when it's young, yeah. Mm. So as it gets older, those flakes kind of start to really become a little bit more harder.
Okay.
Great, beautiful tree.
Can we talk about the spiralness of it all?
Oh, we sure can.
I think we mentioned this one time. The bark literally looks like it's growing in a spiral, or the trunk looks like it's growing in a spiral.
Exactly.
This is due to weather?
It is not quite weather. No one's quite sure what happens. We know that it provides extra strength. So as a tree's grain spirals up, also the bark can start to spiral as well.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes that doesn't happen because you have the cork cambium that produces the bark, and you have the cambium inside underneath the bark that produces the xylem and the phloem.
Okay.
That, the angles of the fibers can be just off a little bit, so it ends up looking like it's spiraling up.
Mm.
Whereas the outside, the bark can be perfectly vertical. It can just look normal.
Interesting.
So in this case, that's all growing together, and they all kind of end up making a spirally pattern in the wood grain as well as the bark. And it is also probably due to the way the tree is swaying and moving around.
Oh, maybe that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah. So that is, there's a lot of different theories about exactly what's happening. No one's quite sure why, what the adaptation is. But most people are thinking it has to do with the fact that a tree is big and exposed to a lot of weather.
Yeah.
And trees famously, as they dampen, I shouldn't say famously, turns out most nobody knows this. So, read my article and I'll tell you all about it. They, as they bend and sway, they don't just go backwards and forwards like what you kind of just imagine, like if you're waving your hand in a kind of a very rigid way. They twist as they bend.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's like a Matrix bullet time.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's perfect. Yeah. Except imagine, you know, not quite so intensely, and they kind of go back and forth in a really nice little fashion.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a perfect explanation. That was excellent. How many people do you think these days have seen the Matrix?
I think a lot of people.
Thank God. I love The Matrix. I think it's so good. Best documentary there's ever been. So that is that spiral pattern that you usually get. So as the tree is bending and swaying, it's bending, but it's also rotating. So you can end up getting this kind of spiraled cracking, these spiraled micro tears and stresses on the wood.
Yeah.
So then when the next wood comes out, it is at an angle because that's kind of how the crack was. So it fixes itself at an angle And then it ends up kind of keeping that going because every year it bends and sways a little bit more. So you end up developing as the tree gets older and starts to hit more wind, get more stress. It maintains that that fixing spiralness.
Well, I think when I said that's due to weather, that's what I meant. It's like the elements, the wind and the...
Honestly, I just thought rain. How much water does it have? Because we also talk about fire damage. Okay.
No.
Yes, you are right then in that case. Yeah.
Well, gorgeous bark, gorgeous form.
Gorgeous form. Becomes rounded. It's, you know, as a big tree. You know?
Yeah.
Starts very, very pointed, you know. Has just a single little leader that comes up. Very thin, very skinny. Mm. Here's the fun thing, though, Alex.
Wow.
It, as it comes out, the branches, the leaves, and by extension, the buds are all in threes.
Interesting.
Yes. Now imagine you have three things, one, two, three, and then you have a second number that's just offset, so they kind of sit in between each other. Okay. So you have one, two, three, four, five, six at any one given point in time. The way that these twigs grow is they are little tiny diamond-shaped leaves that are covered very scale-like on the growth. So the buds underneath those scales, because remember, each scale-like leaf is a leaf, so there's an associated bud.
Sure.
When new twigs grow from those buds, they're also in threes.
Interesting.
So if you look and go, if you can't quite conceptualize what I'm talking about, go to our website, arbitrarypod.com, go to episodes, click on the juniper, scroll down to the very first thing that just simply says the Western juniper, Juniperus occidentalis. That's going to take you to the Oregon State Landscape Plants website. As you scroll down, you'll see a bunch of some paragraphs about this tree, a lot of the stuff that I use when I tell you how to look at it. There's also going to be a picture. The picture is going to be on the left side, and it will show a profile of the tree as if you're looking down the twig. And looking down that twig, he has arrows pointed out. This is all done by Mr. Patrick Breen. And he shows the arrows, and you can see very, very clearly that it grows out in threes, where you have a twig coming out from one side, another side, and then down. Kind of like the spaceships that are the Royal Transport ships in Star Wars, where they have a top wing and then two wings that come down.
Like a piece or a piece sign.
A little bit, yeah. It's like an equilateral triangle.
Yeah.
You know?
So are these oppositely arranged still? The three? They're
in threes.
Well, sorry. Are they... what am I trying to say? Would they be oppositely arranged if there were two? Like, are they growing out from the same spot on the stem?
Yes, they are. Yes, okay. So they're in threes.
They're
so
not staggered. Right?
No, they're whorled in threes.
Whorled. Okay, Casey. I would also love to briefly touch on the stomatal bloom.
Oh, I am happy you brought that up.
Which kind of gives it its gray green appearance.
It does. Yeah, it's got a gray green appearance. Because that stomatal bloom, it outlines each one of these rhombus or diamond-shaped leaves.
Yeah.
So you have three diamond-shaped leaves that go around the twig. And then nestled in between the top of the diamond is the bottom of the next diamond. So they are perfectly nestled in. They look like they are patterned right next to each other.
Yeah, they're like tiles on,
exactly.
on a backsplash.
With this nice little like stomatal bloom going right on the edge of each one of them. So they really like stand out. It's this light blue green, and it just looks fantastic.
The bloom in the tile analogy, the bloom being the grout between the tiles.
Precisely.
It's great. It's a great looking tree.
It really is.
You know, what I love about it, part of the thing I love about it, is that it's great looking from any distance.
It's a
beautiful tree if you just are standing 20 yards away from it. It's beautiful if you're standing up close. It's beautiful if you're taking a really close look and seeing all the little intricacies.
And another intricacy that you'll find is on each one of those leaves, there's a little teeny tiny gland that puts out a little bit of exudate.
Yeah, tell us about this.
Well, it's essentially a thing that happens with a lot of cypress family plants. A lot of the leaves will have these little teeny tiny glands. Sometimes you can't even tell that it's a gland. It kind of just looks like a dark shadowy kind of spot in the middle of the leaf.
Okay.
But on this juniper specifically, it's very obvious, and they put out a very intense little bit of sap, a little bit of resin that just kind of goes.
Yeah.
Bleep.
If you're trying to imagine, like, when you say gland, I think of like a little organ or something.
Yeah.
It's really just like a little pin. pinpoint hole.
Yeah. But you can kind of see it. It looks sometimes a little bit different than what you'd expect. Like, you're thinking maybe like a lenticel, kind of like a little dot. And now I'm not saying that you're wrong, but I'm saying that on other plants as well, and other things in the cypress family, yeah, it looks like there could be, it looks almost like a little depression where you can't see an exact dot, but you see more like, oh, there's, that looks like a little thing that might be there.
Little dip.
Yeah, almost like a bruise. It looks like something bruised it perfectly right in the middle.
Interesting.
But not like hard bruise, just kind of like a, ow.
A little yellow bruise.
Yeah, just the tiniest.
Well, yeah, gorgeous. Gorgeous foliage.
Yeah.
Oh boy, we're big fans of this one, aren't we
are.
Casey?
Yeah, well, only certain times, because that is the mature foliage.
Oh, wow.
It also, famously for junipers, has a juvenile foliage, which is the kind of leaves that we call all-like.
Yeah. All is all.
A-W-L. Yeah.
Comes from a leatherworking tool.
Yeah.
It's like a spike.
It's like a spike. It's pretty much it. It's a spike, and people use it also for like axing into things. Like, you can kind of dig with it a little. And they have these kind of sharp leaves that are oppressed to the stem at the base, and they're wide.
Yeah.
And then they end up popping outwards and skinning down to look more like needles.
Yeah.
So they're very sharp in that regard.
Okay. Don't want to touch them?
You don't want to touch them. They are pokey. They are violent.
Okay.
And they are designed so that if an animal comes over and browses a little bit, tree knows that it's got damaged, sends out a new shoot, and that new shoot will be covered in spikes.
Wow.
So then the animal will be like, okay, I get it. And then won't eat it. And then further down that shoot, it'll start putting on this mature foliage, which is just scales, no protection at all.
How about that?
Isn't that fantastic?
I would love to talk about the cone as well. One of my favorite activities when I'm in Central Oregon is to walk up to a juniper tree, grab a little cone, and crush it between my hands.
Jeez.
And rub it all around, and then go like this.
Ah, really give it a... We give a good smell, good deep.
Like a superstar inhale. Style where she sticks her hands in her pits, you know, then goes, you know what I'm talking about, Molly Shannon?
No.
All right.
I honestly don't think I've seen that movie.
That's fine. You're not missing out.
Okay.
Yeah, lovely smelling elements to this tree.
Yeah.
The cone is no exception.
It's gorgeous.
And when we say cone.
What do we mean, Alex?
Cone-ish.
We mean cone-ish. It's a berry. This is the famous juniper berry, right?
That's right.
Now, you remember juniper berries being the things that are not actual berries, but are actual cones.
Yes.
They are called that because they look like a berry, because they're doing the same thing that a berry would do.
Yeah.
That is getting an animal to eat it, and then it flies away.
Mm-hmm.
Or runs away, whatever, it goes away and poops it out somewhere else.
But if you take the cone and you peel off its sort of outer shell type thing.
Yeah, it's just, well, it's not even an outer shell in this case. Like the things in our, let's say the stinking cedars, they are the trees that are in the Taxus family, Cephalotaxus, and they look like plums, and they have like this outer kind of thing on it. So it looks like one very like uniform fruit looking thing. This, the cone, the actual, like the each scale itself has so much bloom on it and actually becomes fleshy. There's no actual outer layer. You can just kind of rub off the outer layer and you can see all of the different individual scales all smashed together.
Sure.
And then if you like pinch it, kind of what you're talking about, like you brick it open a little
bit. Yeah, yeah.
That you're just really opening the whole scales itself,
okay,
the whole cone.
Okay.
And then you'll see it's fleshy.
So it's not a shell.
No shell.
It's just layers of bloom.
Yeah.
That create like a membrane.
Exactly. Yeah. Wow. So it's all kind of just it is slowly but surely looking like it's fusing itself together.
Yeah, sure.
And that's by design, because it essentially wants to look like one berry that then a bird or an animal would be like, hey, cool, that was sweet. That looks delicious. I'm going to go eat it.
Yeah.
You just said queet when I was saying cool and sweet at the same time.
Man, you're really queet. Anyway, this queet tree is is quite a beauty, Case.
Yeah, it's a really cool tree. And it is also dioecious, which means that it has plants that have predominantly pollen-bearing cones,
sure.
predominantly ovule-bearing cones, that then will become the big fleshy ones that everyone knows about.
Is it possible for a quote female or ovule bearing tree to grow male cones?
It sure is. They don't generally switch back and forth, but it's not like 100%, you know.
It's 98%, 2%.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Where you'd see like, there's a couple cones on that one.
Interesting.
And then one will be like just covered.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. Well, Casey, let's drop the ball here.
Yeah, is that the metaphor you're looking for?
Hey, we drop the ball every episode. This one, we're picking it back up.
There we go.
So let's tell people the story of our coverage of this tree an episode of Completely Arbitrary.
Please, please, please.
Well, I'll start and then you can pick up because this is close to your heart as the content director of this show.
Thank you.
We had this idea, when I say we, it was you, of doing a series of episodes called
The Seven Deadly Stems.
The Seven Deadly Stems.
Yeah. You came up with the name though.
I did?
I think so.
Oh, great. Where we talked about the seven deadly sins,
yep.
being lust, greed, etc. I'm not going to name them all. Lest the devil come after me.
Lest that's how
you summon Beelzebub. and this tree, the Western juniper, was going to represent the sin of greed.
That's right.
You started doing the research and you said, this doesn't feel right.
This doesn't feel right.
Tell us about that.
Well, so the seven deadly sins, as we were talking, some of them are kind of fun. I mean, lust is, let's be honest.
Who doesn't love lust?
Who doesn't love lust, you know? but that's kind of the thing. It's like, it's a bit outdated, right?
Yeah.
So the fact that we have this as like this old, you know, whatever, the Christians of the world of the mid 1000s had to come up with some big morality thing.
Yeah.
So whatever, cool. Let's just live with it.
It reeks of late antiquity.
It does. It really does. And so nowadays, like, it's dubious at best to say that we're really going to take it seriously.
Sure.
Obviously we're making a pun and it's about trees, so we can't take it too seriously, but all this to say, some of them are great. We can make a nice little thing like, let's talk about wrath and this tree and how it does that.
That's fun.
Then when we talk about greed, it kind of still is almost like it has a negative connotation. Even today,
of course.
Even if it's not a seven deadly sin kind of greed, it still is like, you're just being greedy.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not like, there are very few times when someone could say, hey, you know what? Be a little greedy here. And be in a positive light.
Yeah.
So all that to say, I was going through this and normally if I was going to be doing seven deadly stems and I choose greed, I'd be like, yeah, well this tree, and I tell you a story about a tree. It's a little bit of an asshole. It's
a tree that you dislike based on your experience.
Exactly.
With it.
A tree that is going to, you're going to give a little and it's going to take it all and it will never give anything back. As I'm doing this research, I kind of knew where I was going with this. I already had an idea. I knew why we chose this tree for that sin.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole point is, essentially, I'll give you the headline. This is a tree that over the last about 150 years or so has been increasing its range.
Mm.
Not only has it been increasing its range, it's extremely good at competing in its range, and it will suck up all of the water because it just has a really good root system.
It's almost alleliopathic. So it's not killing things, but it is making it harder for other things to live.
Exactly.
Your Honor.
Your Honor. That's spot on, Alex.
Yeah.
That's spot on. So I'm doing some research, and one of the articles that I found was really good, and it's called, I mean, I say it's really good, I have a little bit here. It's called The Tree That Ate the West.
Oh, wow.
It's a very good thing. It's by Biographic is the name of this this company or this this internet website.
Hmm.
And I think the author did a very good job. It's Rebecca Heisman, and the photographer is Catherine Whitney. And they wrote this article, or she wrote this article, on the Western Juniper here in Oregon, went to this very place that you and I imagined that we were walking, this Oregon Badlands wilderness, and talks about how this tree has done something and is called something that I have a big problem with.
Wow.
And that's why I couldn't make it into the seven deadly sin. I felt complacent.
It deserves better.
It deserves better. Or it at least... Let's get into it. Alex.
Okay. Wow.
The reason that I can't do it.
Did you just edit yourself?
I did. I edited
Holy
myself.
Shit.
Yeah. Did you guys see
chills.
That? I got chills. Alex is like, that's my job. Get out of here.
It's like seeing an eclipse.
So the big thing that this is talking about, the subtitle is both native and invasive, protected and reviled, Western junipers are living contradiction.
Wow.
So.
Interesting.
My whole scheme was that this tree's greedy. It is actively expanding its range and taking more land and space. It also is sucking up all the water, so it's better at competing. So it is greedily taking more of all the resources. Great. What a good storyline that would be.
Sure.
The fact that they call this invasive, I have a really big kind of chip on my shoulder for this idea of a native tree being considered invasive.
In its native habitat.
In its native habitat.
Sure.
So.
Yeah, that makes no sense.
It makes no sense.
That's a contradiction of definitions.
Exactly. Which, of course, she literally says right here. It's a living contradiction.
Sure.
But this is my problem. If it's a contradiction, then it's a logical fallacy, and it can't be that. Because by definition, a contradiction is... contradicting itself. It means that it is two different and mutually exclusive things at the same time, which is impossible.
Okay.
So is this tree invasive or is it native? Because if it's native, it can't be invasive.
The idea being, for anybody who's wondering the difference here, invasive means that it goes and invades somewhere that is not its native habitat.
Yes.
Or it's brought somewhere where it's not, Mother Nature didn't intend for it to be. And so it has a different skill set, you know, depending on the rules of the new area, and it gets really strong and it starts like out competing everything to an unfair degree.
Yes, that's literally it. And the way I have termed it in my book, because I wanted to try to give this a little bit of some context, where I say this is before, is a plant that existed in our region prior to Europeans coming over and intervening, essentially just having any effect on the landscape. I'm not going to necessarily say that it is a plant that was brought over on purpose. Sometimes they're not. Sometimes they come because of something else. So
somebody was eating an apple on the ship that carried them over, and they spit it out into the
exactly,
forest.
Yeah. It's not necessarily they came and planted it and said, now this tree's here, and then it, you know, escaped cultivation.
Mm-hmm.
So that is... what I want to do. And even as I say that, it makes me be like, okay, that definition also is a little squishy because intervention and is just changing something. That's why I wanted to make it kind of this broad term before the European settlers came over and just changed how things were. So in this whole area, there's a geographical range. And the geographical range of the Western juniper is known. It's certain areas with certain water types in Oregon, California, and a little bit into Nevada and Idaho and Washington. That is where this tree is geographically native to. And that's kind of what I want to stick with.
Okay.
So conditions change all the time. And you and I have had this conversation a few different times. Like if you cut down a forest or you have a grassland is just a little too dry to become a forest, but give it enough time and a little more water, it will become a forest. Do the opposite, give enough time, take away water, a forest will become a shrubland or a grassland or something else.
These things are in cycles.
It's always going to be changing, you know? And so in this case, there used to be fire. There was fire that was naturally occurring all over the landscape, and there was fire that was set by the native peoples who've been managing the land for all time. The junipers were growing and were held in check on certain areas. And I learned a term, and I want to read this term to you because it's a fun term that I didn't know existed before. But the term is topoedaphic.
Topoedaphic.
Yes. So what this means is that it is, its range and its habitat are kind of exclusive to certain places and so certain soil types. So in this case, they say that it's a topoedaphic dominant or climax species. And they say it in quotes because it's a tree that isn't really competing with anything else. So it is at any given point a early succession, mid succession, late succession tree. There is no other tree. It's not like it's waiting for ponderosa pine to come in and take over or something like that.
When it's in like a juniper forest or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So it grows on the edges of these spaces that have the right kind of soil, which is usually some kind of volcanic-esque kind of thing, very dry, and it grows on spaces that are far enough away from a lot of other stuff where there's just not a lot of fire. So like if you ever go to Eastern Oregon, you can find these rim rock kind of mesa butte areas.
Sure.
And on
is that like Painted Hills?
No, not quite that. It would be a little bit further to the south. The Painted Hills are a different geographic kind of situation.
Okay.
This is where you had like rim rock where you can see very clearly there used to be a bunch of lava that flowed over the land.
I know this.
Yeah. And then it like eroded away. So you get like these big hills with like these perfectly flat tops.
Kind of like it's a classic like American West landscape.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Now over here in Oregon, and this is kind of the beginning of the Great Basin, it's a little bit different than the stuff down in the Southwest, where over here we actually have a little bit more soil than the Southwest generally has. And these trees will grow there and they're perfectly happy. They've grown there for a long time. They live for a long time. They're fire adapted, but they're also sensitive to fire. Hmm. The big old ones can live. The younger ones usually are kaput.
Contradiction indeed.
Exactly. So now, since about 1870, settlers came over and they said, no more fires. We're going to stop doing any fires. We're also going to split up the land. So I have my ranch. You have yours. I guess that over there is going to become what will soon be known as the BLM. So you have this landscape that used to be one big piece of land with this one tree and this whole ecosystem. They call it the sagebrush steppe. And fires would go through, and anytime these junipers would start to encroach down into different places, a fire would come through and be like, bah, 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 back, 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 back.
Sure.
And there's this balance. So junipers grew in their topoedaphic spaces.
Wow.
And the all these other sagebrush plants would grow elsewhere with this also native grass.
Now, if there's one thing I know that European settlers knew how to do, it's throw things off balance.
That's well said, Alex. Uh-huh. And that is precisely what happened. So these trees grow about every 30 to 50 years it takes for them to like become mature and start producing seeds and really start to take over.
Okay.
So it's a dry landscape, so things do not happen quickly. So over the last 150 years, there has been this slow march of the junipers who have, we could say, greedily taken over, slowly but surely. Now, this has been called, and people are using this term in the same way that we say the tree of heaven is an invasive tree that's taking over different spaces and forest areas. That the way that people in the Southeast would say that the calorie pear has started to take over different forest areas, and all these other species, you can name a million. They're using that same terminology to say the Western juniper is an invasive, a horribly noxious invasive tree growing in its native habitat.
Yeah, no.
That just doesn't ring true. Now, there are huge problems with this. The biggest problem the biggest problem that people are trying to make sure it's framed in is habitat for the sage grouse. I should say the greater sage grouse.
Is that a bird?
That's a bird. It's a beautiful, beautiful bird. It's, if not endangered, it's certainly threatened because of habitat loss. Habitat loss, in this case, includes junipers coming down into what used to be sagebrush areas that only had sagebrush that's maybe 2 or 3 feet tall. It's because if a plant is more than 4 feet tall, the sage grouse do not do their fancy reproductive thing that they do.
It is an incredible procedure.
Have you heard about this?
Yeah.
Dude. Oh, can you tell us? Well, what do you know? What do you know?
Well, they fill up these big sacks on their chest, and then what, they kind of beat them with their wings.
They beat them with the wings, and they also make like these weird clicking sounds, like dancing things.
Yeah, it's like a it's like a, oh, that's a good example. I can't think. Go to YouTube and look up sage grouse mating ritual or whatever.
Then they do it. They have these spaces called lek, L-E-K. And you go, they have like a bunch of females will kind of meet up here. And then the males come and just dance their asses off.
Yeah.
And then they all start, you know, having their babies. And they do this only where there's the right kind of conditions, which include a lack of tall trees. Because hawks and different falcon birds will be hanging out in those tall trees waiting for the sex dance, and then they'll go and, you know, ruin everything that's good in the world.
Sure, a bunch of cock blockers up there.
Well said. Now, to be clear, we're not going to beep that out because a cock is a
male bird. Yes, thank you.
I know when you're being intentional with your language.
They're literally cock blockers.
They're literally so. It's literally so.
So, damn it. I wish that was the focus of this episode so that could be the title.
The cock blocker. Well, okay, I should say technically I don't know if we would call them cocks versus like a male rooster.
Oh, who cares?
I know, but I'm just saying, Alex, this is why we have to be careful.
No, you don't even need to.
This
just
is why,
smile and nod. Yes, it works. It's good.
This is why you come up with the names. Better smiling than nodding. Oh, man. So in this case, you have junipers coming in and they're out competing sagegrass and they're coming into these areas. Yeah. Used to be, as far as the eye could see, sage and that's it. Like there's some beautiful places outside of Bend that you just look and it's just like these perfectly spaced, dotted patterns of the sage for as far as you can see.
So beautiful.
It really is.
That color palette, by the way.
It's outstanding.
Incredible.
So that is what it used to be. You can find sage grouse out there just having a ball.
Yeah.
As the juniper moves in and takes over, these are now looking like woodlands, like legitimate woodlands covered from head to toe with these medium-sized juniper trees. Now, no longer do sagebrush come in there. Now, here's where I'm a little bit dubious and why I'm like, okay, ranchers are the primary landowner, whatever you want to say. That ranch is the primary land use of this area. They have usually the land reserved for cattle. And the cattle is eating native grasses. Now, these native grasses are not meant to be grazed at the level that we graze them at.
Okay.
It's a big problem. It has been for decades. They're doing things about it.
Like the cows are eating them too fast and they're not growing back fast enough for the cow to have more.
Precisely. Or anything else. Like sage grouse.
Like some grasses you would eat and then like the next week it would be...
Yeah, it's pop back up.
Yeah.
But this ecosystem is a little too fragile for that. It's not wet enough. So the grasses will grow and then they'll grow back because they've been evolved and adapted to be eaten by all sorts of herbivores for a very long time.
Okay.
But when you have an intense amount of cattle that are voracious and way bigger than, say, a pronghorn or something like that, an antelope, you end up finding that they graze too much too quickly.
It's an unnatural thing.
Exactly. So this is also what happens when you have junipers come in. They will outcompete the grasses, even though they're native grasses, and they will push the grasses out, which is exactly what happens with forest succession. As soon as you get trees coming in, they outcompete the things that are not trees.
Yeah.
Most of the time, if there's enough water and no fire. So our junipers are just doing what they do. They are just being junipers in their native habitat and taking advantage of the lack of fire.
Sure.
So you have ranchers on one hand really upset because they're like, we got to get rid of all these junipers. They are an absolute invasive scourge upon the world.
Mm.
Then you have these other wildlife people who are like, the sage grouse is losing all of its habitat because these goddamn junipers are coming in everywhere.
And who takes it from all ends?
The junipers.
Yeah.
But they're not it. That's fine. Like, honestly, you burn half of them down. There's still going to be plenty. They are the birds. Their fruit, of course, is spread by birds. Mm-hmm. So they're always popping up all over the place. Like, they're very good at what they do.
Sure.
So they are out of balance. 100%. I agree with this. However, I am dubious about the ranchers being so gosh dang upset about this because they are trying to work to make their living. And I really want to acknowledge that's good. Like, you are running this. I eat the cows that you are making. I get it. But I will not go so far as to call this tree an invasive thing, the worst invasive thing to ever happen in this part of the world since the humans that are there invading this part of the world, who have changed the entire landscape in a very literal way to be out of balance.
Yeah.
And now, because you tip the scales in favor of this one tree, the one tree's like, yeah, great, I'm going to take over because that's what I do. And now you're complaining about it.
Right.
Because and I'm like, well, you did in the first place.
Totally.
Like, so it's a, it kind of just is a very complicated circular thing where on one hand, yes, we want the sage grouse habitat. But on the other hand, I'm not so humanistic most of the time to say, yeah, no, we need ranches. I'm like, well, maybe we need to change our management practices, have fewer cows or use the space differently and manage it. And trust me, this is like a very controversial, convoluted subject. I'm barely even getting in to really give someone. There's going to be great arguments on all sides.
Okay.
However, I am insistent that we need to just understand this not as a good or bad thing. And I just am convinced, Alex, that there is no possible way that we can say a native species is in fact an invasive species. That's all I have, Alex. What do you think?
Wow. Mic drop.
Mic drop. There's plenty more, I guess, we could talk about.
Wow, you know, I'm in agreeance. I feel like this story comes up in like the template of this story.
Yeah,
comes up in so many ways. Like,
there's a lot of ways to see it, right?
Well, there's a human caused issue, and then the humans complain about it, and the thing that always ends up taking the brunt of the heat off of these issues is the environment.
Yeah. It's almost like you blame the trees for just doing what they've always done.
Yeah.
Taking advantage of the situation you created.
It's almost like propaganda. Like,
it feels like,
look what
it?
These trees are doing. By the way, we made them do it. You better cut them all down.
Yeah. We enabled these consequences and now we're so mad that they're happening.
Yeah. It's like war propaganda to make it okay to like vilify this tree that's just like crushing it in its native habitat.
Yes. Geographically native for certain.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's... I'm mostly curious what this article says about all this.
Well, honestly, it's a very well-written article. I really did like it.
We're not coming after this author or this article.
No, not at all. This is more of a discussion on the framing of a tree being native as invasive.
Uh-huh.
That's the big, that like, right there.
Okay. Just to be annoying and to be a good podcaster and to be a contrarian.
Yes.
Let's say that I'm like, honestly, who gives a shit? This is like 2020, Alex, right?
Yeah.
Like I would say, you would say people are vilifying the Western juniper and calling it invasive when it's not. Back then I might have said, so
why?
Who gives a shit?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Answer that question. Why is this important?
I think it's important because it mixes two very specific terms.
Okay.
And it kind of blurs the definition in a kind of management sort of way, where anytime a tree is doing something in a place we don't want it to be doing it, we'll call it invasive.
Sure.
And if we start doing that, then we can say, well, you know, the Douglas fir is invasive here in the Willamette Valley, or this other tree is invasive because we changed the land use and now it is taking over where another tree used to be dominant because of, let's say, fire. Fire is always it usually always revolves around fire.
Yeah.
So we can call any tree that takes advantage of this change in this one kind of disturbance regime as an invasive species in that area, even though everything is cyclical, everything is moving forward at some pace. I don't want to say forward. Everything is moving and going through stages of succession.
Yeah.
So if there is a species that we decide we want to vilify, like you said, then we can do that on the auspices that, well, shoot, this didn't used to grow here, so we should get rid of it. It is invasive. I think, like you said, it's vilifying the wrong thing. It is it's a scapegoat for what we are actually doing, which is this larger land use regime.
That is also something that comes up a lot on this podcast, is like fixing the what do you call it? Like treating the symptom, the disease.
Exactly. Right? Yes. That's exactly it. I would use the term that Jared Diamond presented in Guns, Germs, and Steel.
Yeah.
Where there's the proximate cause and there's the ultimate cause.
Right.
Ultimate cause is that big thing. The proximate cause are the things that we look at and say, we're running out of grass and we're running out of sage grass habitat. What's the proximate cause? There's juniper everywhere. What's the ultimate cause?
Mm-hmm.
Fire regimes.
Right. Okay. Interesting. A lot to chew on here.
It's a lot to chew on.
Much like the grasses upon which the cows feed. And after the break, we'll shit it all out into a review of this tree.
Sometimes I just am always stunned about the poetics that you can just pull out of.
Thank you.
Anyway.
And with that, we'll be right back. Alex here. Here's a little something about me. I love to be cozy. Coziness is of utmost importance to me, and I am in a constant search for coziness. And that is why we present to you Cozy Earth. Cozy Earth makes luxurious bedding and clothing products. And what do I mean by luxurious? Let me tell you this. I now have Cozy Earth sheets on my bed. I wear a full Cozy Earth sweatsuit to bed, and I have been getting the best sleep of my life. It is quite literally the softest material I've ever put on my body, and my skin is so happy in it. I usually have a little bit of a sensory thing. I don't like things touching my skin. Clothes are tough, but with Cozy Earth, I am treated to superior softness, unparalleled fabric, materials, and weave. This is a real endorsement. It's the most comfortable material to ever grace my birthday suit. And guess what? You deserve this coziness too. So treat yourself to the ultimate in comfort and indulgence with Cozy Earth bedding and sleepwear. And you know what? Completely arbitrary, listeners. A little inside detail here. You all get 35% off at CozyEarth.com with promo code TREES. That's TREES for 35% off at CozyEarth.com. Now you go and get cozy.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Casey, it's time to give a review to this tree.
Yeah, we gotta give a review.
And here's how it works.
Okay.
We're gonna get some final thoughts and then give this tree a rating of 0 to 10 golden berries of honor.
Wow. I hate that.
As our resident expert, we will begin with you.
Oh, you know, I think the Western juniper is beautiful. I think it's underplanted and we should utilize it more in rough places where we don't necessarily need to worry about it having a negative impact on sage grouse habitat or ranch habitat or whatever. I think it's a tree that is underused and should be used more.
Nice.
That's my thought. I also think that it is beautiful, and I don't think that this tree is at fault for being a tree that is good at doing what it does.
Hear, hear.
It's not an invasive tree. It is not a tree that we're like, God, this is ruining habitat because it shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
It's ruining habitat because we changed the habitat to be better for it.
And now you're defining a habitat, this tree's habitat, as something that it is not, but that you could have made it, but you made it something else.
My God, I'd never heard something so clear in my life.
And then I throw my nachos at it.
Yes. Now I want there to be, I want it to be back in balance.
Yes.
To be very clear.
Mm-hmm.
I need to say that I can't blame this tree for throwing it off balance. It just happens to be sliding down to where it the balance is taking it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to give the Western juniper, and I'm going to compare this to some other junipers that I'm thinking in my head right now make sure I'm doing this right. I'm going to give it an 8.8.
8.8.
It's an 8.8 for the Western juniper. So I think it's the best of all the junipers.
Wow.
You heard it here first. Okay, the best of all the junipers.
No,
I
come on, stick
right
to
then.
It.
All right, it's the best of all the junipers. Any other juniper is not as good.
You have to editorialize, my man.
You're right. You're right. Now that I look back, Casey said this is his favorite tree every single episode.
If you're going to be an influencer, you have to make strong statements without thinking about it too much.
That's why I'm a horrible influencer. I have actually taken Western juniper berries and made my own sourdough from them because they have yeast on there. The bloom.
The bloom is yeasty?
Yeah, it's got yeast on it. So you can put that in, add a little bit of stuff to it.
Sir, the bloom is yeasty.
Get out there now.
Take the shot.
Alex has been playing a lot of games recently.
The bloom is yeasty is the new The Eagle Has Landed.
The bloom is yeasty. Yeah, so I'm going to go
8.8 golden berries of honor.
Alex, do you have an opinion on this tree? Because this is another tree you've had a lot of experience with.
Yes.
You've actually been east of the Cascades multiple times.
Of course. Yes, of course. I will say, like, even trees that grow in the Pacific Northwest,
mm-hmm.
I don't have a ton of experience with all of them because, as I've said before, I'm an indoor boy most of the time. But I do have a great fondness for Central Oregon, the Bend area,
Yes.
Just around the bend, I would say. And I love juniper country. I love walking out in the morning, wherever I'm staying in Central Oregon.
Yeah. No, don't call it Eastern. Everyone gets really upset.
Sorry, everyone.
No, you did okay. You did okay. I'm just saying, anyone out there who says Eastern Oregon, you're talking about east of Bend.
Yes.
Central.
Yes. Where I no longer like Oregon.
Wow. All right. Another conversation.
And I love walking out in the morning and you just get this flood, especially in the cool months. I feel like the air is just rich with the perfume of the junipers.
Yeah, it's evergreen. It's always there.
It is a gorgeous smell. I think they look fabulous. Mm. I think a juniper, if you're in the right place, would make a great statement piece tree.
Yeah.
In the middle of your yard.
Definitely. I've seen one here. I forgot where it was, but it's in Portland. Oh. I'm pretty sure it was a Western juniper.
And it's got this great bonsai tree, by the way.
Yeah.
It's got this storied look to it. It flows like water. It's just gorgeous. When they're really old and have a lot of rings on their growth. They have this sort of, I mean, some of them I've seen, like, they have almost no, they're just directionless.
Mm-hmm.
They're just kind of going with what feels good. I know all trees do this, shut up. But they're like, they have this appearance to them where they just like flow and they have beautiful curves and they've got a shape to them.
Well,
and I love that they take a different approach to growing a cone, much like our friend the U.
Yes.
It's not your traditional cone.
And our podocarp friends.
Yes, that's right. Not your traditional cone. I think that's really interesting. And there are a few things that I dislike about this tree that I know of.
Wow.
And I don't live around them every day. This is like how my childhood friend Emily, I love like woodland creatures and I love deer.
Yeah.
And she reviles deer because she grew up where she would walk out in the morning and there'd be a bunch of fucking deer in her yard and they would spit at her. You know,
that's just mean.
If I lived around junipers, I'd be like, I'm so fucking sick of junipers.
Yeah, I think that is something that people have.
Yeah. But I do not, and so I'm not sick of them. I love them. 9.2.
Wow.
Golden berries of honor.
9.2, 8.8. That's a 9.0 on average. And that's true math.
That was our review of the Western juniper. Casey, it's time for our completely arbitrary AMA. Today, we have a question regarding cones.
Oh.
From Adam Hallahan.
Adam Hallahan? How the heck are you?
If you want to ask us a question and get on this AMA train, join up on Completely Arbitrary's Treemium. Here comes the AMA train. It asks, it's our brand new support platform. It's the best way to support the show and get a bunch of cool rewards, bonus audio, cone stickers every month, AMA access, live stream access. If you just want to, you know, support this podcast that you love so much. And this week, our question comes from Adam. Adam says, now, I think Adam might be new to the podcast.
Oh, Adam, hey.
And I'm getting this from context clues because he says, hi, Alex. I have heard your cone collection mentioned in episodes, and I'm interested in starting one as well.
No Now,
Casey is the man with the ridiculous cone collection. Yes. I have a few scattered around my apartment.
You do? Yeah. I think it's just like, I have to admit, if you associate yourself with me for any amount of time, it starts to happen. Like,
oh, yeah. Cones show up.
Yeah.
Adam says, I am a teacher, and they, the cones, would serve as great decorations and instructional tools for my classroom.
100%.
Do you have any tips or resources you can link out to that would help someone like me who is starting with no knowledge?
Alex, what do you think?
Well, here's what I know from your cone collection. So here's what you do. This is what I know from Casey. You've got some options for depending on the application here.
Yeah.
If you want to store your cones in a more professional, scientific way, you get yourself a jar, the size of which will depend on the size of the cone. Make sure it fits when it's going in.
Yes. The mouth is the most important in terms of jars.
I've said this. And then it doesn't, you know, you want to think about the cone expanding when it dries out, if it's a wet cone, and you want to make sure that the jar will fit that too.
Correct.
Before you put it in there, though, do yourself a favor. Buy some little tags with some strings. You can find these at any... Gosh, you could probably find them at a teacher supply store.
It's very possible, yeah. A science supply store also.
Certainly. You write the name, the common name of the cone species and the scientific name of the cone species. Put a date on there when you put it in there. That's a fun idea.
Yeah, I like that.
Casey's giving me a face like, hey, I never thought of that. That's pretty good.
I never thought of that.
You might try it. Like people writing the date on the back of a photo, right?
Yeah,
this is when I collected this cone.
Yeah.
And then you just twist the top. You forget about it. Put some Gorilla Glue in there so you can never open it again.
I don't necessarily recommend that, but yes. Alex is so far doing great.
Now, if you just want them for decoration, I say you go Christmas style and make a garland of cones.
Oh.
And you stagger big cone, little cone, big cone, little cone.
Yeah.
You can do all sorts of patterns.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. That's what I got.
All right. Excellent. Well, I notice you have not done either of those things, Alex, as I look around.
So do as I say, not as I do.
I am going to propose that you do exactly that. And also just like toss them around. I would say identify the cone for certain. That's an important part of this all.
That's also really fun.
It is, yeah. And that is what I think kids have the most fun with. And as a teacher, that I think is one of the most important things you can do.
Mm.
You have probably heard me, many people have, talked about how I think that people learning the names of trees and how to identify them, even rudimentarily, like you don't need to say why this is oak tree A and why this is pine tree B. Just say, this is that pine tree.
Yeah.
And then kids can understand it. They can already identify it. They can see it and say, yeah, okay, I see what that looks like. It is that.
It's also very fun to be able to, like, if you're on a walk, to be able to say, hey, that's this.
Exactly.
It's impressive. It's fun. It's fun to use your knowledge.
Yeah. And kids are really good at this.
Yeah.
Everyone is, but kids especially, just like they're good at everything, they're always learning and taking in everything.
Mm-hmm.
But teach them how to identify the tree first. And go find those little cones. Find as many as you can from different trees. Identify that tree. Do everything Alex said. And then you can have those set up and around. You can go sometimes to arboretum or parks and do this, and they'll have names of the trees. But you can snag a couple little cones of whatever trees nearby, put them somewhere to dry off a little bit, add that tag, and then you got your kids learning how to identify trees by just this one part. So when they walk outside again, they'll be like, wow, look, that's a cone from the Douglas fir I learned at school.
I will also say, I know this isn't really what the question was about, but since we're talking about teaching people how to identify things, having a little mnemonic device or a little tale, a little story.
Yeah.
And I say tail very deliberately because for the Douglas fir, you got your little mouse butts, you know, coming out of the cone.
Exactly.
That's a great example of a little fun fact that you can associate with that cone.
Yeah.
Because if you can identify the cone, you can identify the tree, right?
Exactly. It's precisely right.
Thank you so much, Adam, for your question. Like I said, if you've got a question for us, support the podcast on Completely Arbitrary Treemium. Become a Treemium member today at arbitrarypod.supercast.com. Casey.
Another good one, Alex.
Another one for the books.
Mm-hmm.
Just a reminder, we have a brand new tote.
That's right. We got a tote and new episode of The Seed Pod. It just came out this last week.
Hell yeah. And if you want one of those totes, go to arbitrarypod.com/merch and use the discount code newtote with a question mark. Get 10% off that brand new tote.
Love this today.
Casey.
Great work today. Thanks for the conversation, Alex.
Yeah, thank you.
Really appreciate it.
It was an interesting one.
Yeah, we'll see what everyone else thinks, because I'm sure someone over in Eastern Oregon is probably like, oh, no, no, no.
Yeah.
This tree sucks.
I can hear them typing the email,
and
we welcome it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we welcome we welcome this type of examination.
For sure. And with that, we say thank you so much for listening to this episode of Completely Arbitrary. We'll see you next time. Bye.
See ya.
Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp. Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals. If you want to support this podcast and become a Treemium member, head over to arbitrarypod.supercast.com. Thanks for listening.